I think that's most people have in by now. So again, a welcome to this meditation retreat, 9-day retreat. Looking around, some of you have been on my retreats before, some have not. So on these retreats, please understand that this is a retreat run according to the Eightfold Path, Four Noble Truths. In order to, first of all, to relax you, to make you nice and peaceful and calm, because when the body is relaxed and at peace, only then can the mind start to relax and become at peace. And as the mind relaxes and becomes at peace, not only does it feel good, you start to get some joy and happiness coming up in your mind, but also your mindfulness increases. It is from stillness that mindfulness becomes strong. And as your mindfulness becomes stronger and stronger, so that you have the ability, because you can see more, that you can make the mind even more peaceful and still. So this is a way of guiding the mind to deeper and deeper stages of stillness. And for those of you who haven't heard my teachings before, you will know that we never call this concentration. That word concentration was a very unfortunate translation of the Buddhist word for samadhi, done by Professor Rhys Davids, who was also responsible for the brilliant translation for sati of mindfulness. That was wonderful. But he didn't really make such a good job of samadhi by calling it concentration, because concentration is something you do. It is something you make happen, and it is quite stressful, it is a struggle, it cannot be maintained. But stillness, being a default state of the mind, is quite easy to maintain once you get to stillness. So here on this retreat, the samadhi, the eighth factor of the Eightfold Path, is never thought of as being about concentration. Everything to do about stillness. Now, once you get that into your head, that this is a meditation retreat which is promoting stillness, it becomes also very obvious that you never get still by working too hard, by struggling, by striving, by making effort, because it is the effort which actually disturbs the mind in the first place. And all the effort comes from the sense of self, of me, trying to get somewhere, trying to do something, judging and controlling. And you should understand that if one goes on a path of what you understand as effort, you will just get a bigger amount of sense of control, a bigger sense of ego, until one eventually becomes frustrated and angry. It's not the way of meditation. It's the way of meditation is allowing the sense of self to vanish, and with it the sense of control. So you let things be instead of making them happen. So when you understand what stillness is, it becomes quite clear, the sort of path into stillness. And of course that takes a lot of patience. It takes a while for the body and mind to adjust to a regime here in Jhana Grove, which is very, very, some people say, lenient. Because here, we're not going to put CCTV cameras in your rooms and wake you up in the morning with a big bell and punish those who don't come for the first meditation at 5 a.m. You won't be stopped from having your food, because that's a punishment. You're not going to have lunch today or breakfast. We don't do things like that, because that is totally un-Buddhist. It just uses fear to control people. So first of all, I will not be judging you at all during this retreat. If ever you come to the interviews, which are going to be happening not tomorrow, but from Sunday onwards, morning and afternoon, for those of you who've been to my retreats before, you will notice that you come up and say, oh, I've been sleeping all the time, I have my iPad, I've just been watching movies in my room, I've snuck in all sorts of food for the evening. And when you say that, my response is always, very good. I will not criticize you at all. You come in there and you say that you've got the first stage of jhanas and you're now enlightened and you can fly through the air, you can understand your past lives. And I will say to you, very good. I am not going to judge you, because it's that judging which creates this sense of trying to achieve things, which again reinforces this sense of self, which means you never find any peace at all. So here, the first thing I'm going to say is what Ajahn Chah, my teacher, used to say again and again and again. You meditate not to attain things. You meditate to let go of things. A powerful teaching, which I put in right at the beginning of this retreat. You're not here to attain things. You're here to let go of things. Not to accumulate more stuff. Because we call that spiritual materialism. They're getting more experiences. Just more amazing things you can tell your friends after you leave. Just to prove how great a meditator you are. That is just spiritual materialism. Building up an ego, a sense of self, over what happens to you in your meditation. Instead, we're learning how to let go of all of that. To the point that we're so peaceful because we don't need any of that anymore. We're here to let go, not to attain. So straight away, hopefully that will allow you to let go of much of the baggage you bring when you come on a retreat like this. So many people have their aspirations and their goals. They are going to meditate longer than they did before. This is not the Olympic Games. You're not here to beat your personal best. You're here to let go of the idea of personal, and certainly the idea of best. So instead, we are patient, living in this moment, being here, and just seeing what happens from moment to moment, to really learn how to relax. And I put emphasis on relaxation, because sometimes that people are so tense, they're so tight inside, that yes, they can sit for an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours without moving, but it's not meditation at all, it's just control. And for those who haven't heard these stories before, when Ajahn Chah was asked, do you really have to sit long periods of time, many hours, if you want to become enlightened? He said, if that was the case, that enlightenment depended on sitting here hour after hour after hour without moving, he said that all the chickens in the world would be enlightened. Because they sit on their eggs for hour after hour after hour without moving at all. And if you think you've got a sore bum, imagine those chickens on those round eggs. They're hard. That must really, really give them a sore bottom after a few hours of that. But you've never seen a chicken who is enlightened yet. And if you think that just, again, even standing still, I always make the comparison to those guards outside of Buckingham Palace who can stand still for an hour, hour and a half, and you think to be able to resist all those camera flashes of people trying to tease them, that would take a lot of stillness. But that's all done through control, through force. That is not the way of meditation. So we don't try and time ourselves. Who sits the longest? Who gets up the earliest? Who stays up the latest? Or like many people do when they go into the walking meditation rooms, which is behind there. Please, you have to leave a little gap between the back there so they can go into the walking meditation rooms there and behind those doors and in the back as well, so people can access those. But sometimes when people do walking meditation, it's a competition for who can walk the slowest, not the fastest. And they think that the one who is the slowest is the most mindful. That is, it's a word I'm going to introduce, which you'll know, you'll hear many times during this retreat. It's a Pali word called Gomayang. The Pali word Gomayang has two parts to it. The first part, Go, is the word in Pali, the ancient Buddhist language, for a bull, a male cow. And Mayang means what comes out of the back end of that bull. Because sometimes when I say the English word, which is bullshit, people get offended. So instead I now use the word Gomayang. So that's one word you can learn over here. So when you go back home and somebody gives you some really stupid stuff, you can say, that's a bunch of Gomayang. It means bullshit. So some of the ideas about walking slowly is important for mindfulness. That is Gomayang. It really doesn't matter how fast or slow, how long. What's really important is the quality of your meditation. How peaceful, how relaxed you are. And that is such an important thing in developing deep states of meditation, that we have to build a foundation of a relaxed body. Which is one of the reasons why this talk is not going to go on that long this evening. I all want you to have an early night so you can relax, settle in, and so that you can catch up on some sleep. Because I've known this for a long time, ever since I was teaching in Kuala Lumpur some years ago, and they asked me to give a session, actually an all-day teaching commitment, to a youth seminar, a Buddhist youth seminar, 15 to 25-year-olds, about 400, 500 of them. And one very, very bright monk had the genius idea of asking all the students there to write on a piece of paper their five biggest emotional problems in their life, and to collate them all, to find out 15 to 25 year olds in a modern city what bothers them the most. And when somebody collated all the answers, the winner by a long margin, the emotion which troubled these 15 to 25 year olds more than any other emotion, was tiredness. Youth was so exhausted. And if I did that here, I'm sure that that emotion would also be one of the most troubling for each one of you. And it's because of that tiredness that you try and meditate and you fall asleep and get dull. And you try and fight that dullness and it just makes you more frustrated. There's no happiness and joy in the meditation. It's not natural anymore. Or that because you're tired, you get aches and pains and sicknesses in the body, flus and colds, because the body's immune system is depressed. Or you get grumpy and upset, a lot of times just because of tiredness. So having realized that is one of the very big obstacles to people getting joy, peace, stillness in meditation. First few days, take it easy. It's one of the reasons why when I designed this meditation retreat center, I insisted everyone has their own room. So you can go into there any time throughout the next 9 days, take a nap. You even have your own ensuite there, so you don't need to queue up to go to the bathroom or to go to showers. You can have a nice, relaxing time. People say this is too soft. They call it more like a resort than a meditation center because they've been used to meditation retreat centers which are far more forceful, which don't understand that one of the big obstacles is just basic tiredness. So when you are sleepy, go and take a rest for the first 2 or 3 days. Catch up on your rest. When you do need to meditate, come and meditate. You can meditate here, or you can meditate in your room, or on the stoop, or find some other place in this complex, or even over at Bodhinyana, the monastery just over the road, to do some meditation. That's fine, or walking meditation. But if you really get tired, you can do what I call meditating flat out on your bed. And it's also the reason why we don't have any bells in this retreat center. Bells would drive me crazy when I went to retreats when I was a young man. I've been meditating since I was 18. I'm now 64. And I used to do all these retreats where you'd have a bell to wake you up in the morning, a bell to tell you when breakfast was, another bell to tell you when you had to come to the talk, another bell to tell you now to sit down, another bell. Quite like being at school again. And it would drive you crazy, because there were some times, if you meditate by the bell, there's some times when a 45-minute meditation is way too long. 20 minutes you want out, and it's just really painful to stay that longer. That is why when I used to go to these retreats, I always thought I'd actually get either a pea shooter or a little slingshot. So I could put a pea in there, and if it was about only 20 minutes, I could actually aim at the bell, ding! So I could control the bell and make sure it was rung early if I didn't like it. And, but there's also the case, what happened? So often you're really getting into it, at last your meditation was working, and you're about to get enlightened, and bong! Everybody up. Oh, that really sucked. Imagine what would have happened. The Buddha under the Bodhi tree at Bodh Gaya is about to get enlightened. Gong! Come on, get up. There would never be a Buddha at all. Because you cannot force meditation. Sometimes you're hot and the meditation goes so easily. You really get deep. The last thing you want is to be stopped because of some stupid bell. And other times you realize, no, you've had enough. Get up. So we don't have bells here. And because there's a few new people here, if you've heard this before, you can put your fingers on your ears. This is one of the worst of my jokes. Because we don't have any bells, that is the meaning of no bell silence. Sometimes noble silence before people think you're not supposed to talk. That's not noble silence. No bell silence. No bells. No routines. No time. You have to get up. You have to do this. You have to do something else. This is not a control camp. And when we do have no bell silence, some of you, many of you, may get the result of no bell silence, which is the Nobel Peace Prize. If you don't like the jokes, get out now. There'll be more bad ones coming. But what that actually means, you do find more peace, more happiness, more stillness when you go according to nature. And so that's one of the reasons why we don't really have a schedule here. We have a few things. Now, there's a talk at 8 o'clock every morning. There's a breakfast. What time is the breakfast? 6:45? You don't need a bell to tell you what time breakfast is. You will know. Your tummy will tell you. Same with lunch. You know when it's lunchtime. So I have a talk at 8 o'clock. You can come to that if you wish. But if you don't, I'm not going to criticize you. I'm just going to say very good again. And in the afternoon, we have nothing really, just a few interviews. And evening, another Q&A session. I'm going to charge you at 10 to 8. And then some... Q&A in the evening. So it's a very simple schedule. So around this simple schedule, that's how you build up, you know, your own sort of meditation. Resting, eating, going for a walk. And the only way you can do that successfully is to be aware enough of what you need. Of what your body needs and what your mind needs. Which is one of the reasons why I ask you, in order to encourage that mindfulness, the awareness, one skillful means of arousing mindfulness of your body and also mindfulness, awareness of your mental state, is ask. Ask your body, what do you want? How do you feel? How's it going, body? A simple question like that, the question serves to point your attention to your body, to actually to feel it, what it needs. Is it tired? Is it energized? Is it hurting? Just asking a question. What do you want, body, right now? I just asked that question. It needed some water. It's hot in here. I'll give myself a drink. You know, just if people were more aware of their bodily needs, they'd be far healthier. A lot healthier. So ask your body what it needs. A lot of times, the first few days, it will tell you, I need a rest. So go and take a rest. Be kind to your body. And once you're aware of your body, by asking it questions, what does it need? It's so easy to relax this body. And that's one of the first things, the first stages of meditation, which I really emphasize these days. For those of you who've been to my meditation retreats before, I've just gone back to the beginning and just really solidified the foundations of meditation, a peaceful and relaxed body. And once that body is nice and relaxed, there's two things which you have learned already by relaxing the body. Number one, awareness. And number two, letting go. For many years, people have always asked me that. They said, yeah, we know. In order to get deep meditation, in order to understand these great teachings of the Buddha, we have to be still. And to be still, we have to let go. But how do we let go? Please, Ajahn Brahm, help me. I know I have to let go, but I don't know how to do it. And it's answering that question is one of the reasons why I ask people to relax their body, first of all. Because that's something you're more used to. Now, maybe on a weekend, maybe just sitting on a deck chair somewhere in the garden on a long weekend, or maybe you may be wealthy enough to go overseas to some resort and sit on a beach in Bali, and you do feel relaxed. Why? What have you been doing to get relaxed? Not thinking, not planning, not working, just sitting there, doing nothing. Just letting go. And that relaxes the body. Whenever you try to relax the body, it gets tense. Whenever you let go, it gets loose. Sometimes, okay, I can use this thing here. Sometimes it's like a piece of string. This is loose, but imagine I start stretching this. It's torn, it's tense. That's like your body. You're pulling and pushing at something. You're straining it, you're squashing it. And of course, the only way to get this relaxed and loose is to let go of both ends. It's a letting go, a letting be. Not demanding your body does this, not forcing it to do something else. Not even having any goals which stretch you, but letting your body be as it is. With no force, no pressure, no demands, no goals. That relaxes your body. And you know it's relaxed because everybody has enough awareness to know when the body is tight and when it's loose, when it's tense and when it's relaxed. Because you have learned that in your life, but also you know that relaxation, body relaxation, is a very pleasant state. It is one of the reasons why people pay all this money to go to resorts next to the beach, or go to spas, or have a massage, or a hot bath. They do that because it feels great. But you don't need to go all that way to actually have a relaxed body. It's the first thing you're going to learn here. How this body gets really loose, really relaxed, very peaceful, very beautiful. It's one of the reasons why the least you get over the next 9 days is learning how to relax the body, which will improve your health enormously, which means you won't get heart attacks or problems or diseases or stuff like that. Your body gets so relaxed, it feels great. After, if you follow the instructions, that is. Which means that, number one, you are learning the happiness, what in part is the piti sukha, the joy of letting go on your body. So by this bodily relaxation, you are learning something. What letting go is, but on your body, and this gives a great sense of ease and happiness. on your body. And once you do that on your body, it's not that hard to apply exactly the same method on your emotional world, on your mind. Because your mind is just like the body, being pulled and pushed all over the place, being stretched into the future with all of your plans and fears and all the stuff you have to do, which is really important because the world will really become a mess, especially your world, if you don't do it right now. Come on, get it done. That stretches you. It's like the tension, the future pulling you, please, no, deal with me, out of fear, of course. Or the past pulling you back. A lot of tightness and heaviness, having to bear this really heavy burden of what happened to you. That's tension on the body. You've got to let it go, for goodness sake. And then you can understand how the mind becomes really relaxed. I say relaxed mind because many people, when they meditate, they just make their mind more tense. And then they complain, I can't stop thinking, Ajahn Brahm. So tell me what to do. Stupid. It's not what you're doing too much already. Just let go. Okay, let go. Okay, I'm going to let go of the past. Come on, past, go. Go, 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 go. And it doesn't work. There's more past. Let go of the future. It keeps on bothering you. So instead of that, we just relax the mind. Change the metaphor. Change the whole idea of what meditation is. Relaxing the mind. Because you know what that word means with your body. You know how to relax the body, at least most people do. Well, I've met some people who just got their bodies are so tight, they never learned in their whole life how to relax their body. And they're the ones who did get heart attacks and all sorts of other stuff wrong with them. They're just far too tight, the way they hold their body. But once you learn how to relax the body, you do exactly the same skills on your mind. So how do you relax the body? You don't say, okay, sit straight. Come on, do it this way. You don't tell the mind what to do. You ask the mind, what do you want to do? How do you feel? What do you need right now? It's simple kindness and letting your mind be. If you have some goal, some idea of what your mind is supposed to be like, then you're in trouble. Because your mind is not like that. Which means you have to struggle and strive again. But instead of having some great idea of what your mind is supposed to be like in meditation, how about letting your mind be as it is? Just leaving it alone. Hi mind, how are you doing? You feel terrible. Oh, that's okay with me. Recently, it was over the New Year's period, I was making a point. Because everybody was telling me, Happy New Year, Ajahn Brahm. And I said, no, I am not going to follow your orders. You're telling me to have a Happy New Year. And if I decide to do otherwise, I'll upset you. So that's not a nice greeting. The greeting should be, have a Happy New Year if you want to, but have a bad New Year if you want to. It's up to you. I'm not going to force you. I'm going to love you whatever you do. It's the same as loving kindness. Buddhists have all this stupid idea of loving kindness. May all beings be happy and well. Why are you putting your wishes on these poor other beings? Telling them, may you be well. What if they don't want to be well? That is their right, not to be happy and well. So instead of you forcing everybody to be happy and well, real loving kindness is, may all beings be happy and well, or well if they want to. If they don't want to, that's fine by me. That's loving kindness. Do you get the point here? We're forcing our body and our mind like we force other beings into some idea of what the world should be, of what meditation should be, what I should be. And that is a problem. That's why we never have any freedom, peace, enlightenment. So instead, we look at our mind. How are you doing, mind? And we love our mind for what it is. If it's sleepy, you want to be sleepy, mind? Fine by me. If you're really sleepy, I'm going to take you to the sleepy meditation room, which is my bed. So have a nice rest, if you're that sleepy. If you want to think, fine by me, off you go, think mind. Be kind to your mind. Because if you're kind to your mind, you're not forcing it, you're relaxing it, Just like when you want to relax a body. If you want to scratch your nose, please do so. It's not against the rules here. Did Bianca tell you what the rules were? Did she tell you the rules of the retreat? Eight precepts. Is one of the eight precepts you should not pick your nose? No, I didn't hear that. That's not against any precepts, so you can do that if you want. You can rub your nose, you can put your finger in your ear to clean out the wax. That's fine. You can cough, you can sneeze. That is fine. Relax, for goodness sake. So you'd ask your mind, what do you want to do? Your mind wants to think, let it think. Because what you're doing here is relaxing. And this is almost like reverse psychology, but this is how it works. If you let your mind be, yeah, it will sort of test you out and think all sorts of things for a while, but then it will start to settle down. I always used to wonder, why does my mind always wander off when I was a young meditator? Instead of trying to force it, I tried to understand it. And I understood the reason why my mind wouldn't stay still, because it was running away from me. I'd given it such a hard time that my mind didn't like me. Every time I started to meditate, it was as if mine said, oh God, here he is again. I'm getting out of here. And that's what it did. Fell asleep or ran away, here they're all over the place. Until I decided to be kind to my mind. Until we became the best of friends. Have you got a best friend in this world? A really close friend. And sometimes they give you a call, say, how are you doing? Do you want to come out for a cup of coffee? And you stop everything you're doing just to go out with them because they're a really close friend. You really enjoy their company. That's like me and my mind. Tell my mind, hey mind, meditation time now, do you want to come? Say, oh yeah, we've had such wonderful times in meditation in the past. My mind and I are really, really good friends. But if you're the control freak, always telling your mind what to do, when to do it, how to do it, no wonder your mind runs away. As you would run away if you got some boss or some partner you have to live with, always telling you what to do and how to do it. That really sucks. So instead of that, be kind to your mind. And if you're kind to your mind, how are you doing, mind? If you want to fall asleep, that's fine by me. If you want to think, that's fine by me. Then your mind changes. It relaxes. The pressure is taken off it. And instead of becoming tight and tense, it becomes all loose and soft. Just like when your body becomes loose and soft, all the aches and pains vanish. When your mind becomes loose and soft, all the past and future vanish. All the thinking stops. Your mind is like the lake. The past and the future and the thoughts are just waves on the surface. That's all they are. They're not the big problem. The big problem is just how still is the lake. If the lake is still, there's no waves. End of problem. If your mind is relaxed, you find the past and future don't really come up. The mind doesn't need to go wasting time in those places because it's happy where it is. It doesn't want to run away anymore. It doesn't want to go thinking about stuff because it is relaxed. That is called letting things be. Not trying to do stuff and get rid of stuff. But relaxing, letting it be. And your mind gets more and more calm, and more still. That is a foundation. And then later on in the meditation, you know, whenever the mind is really peaceful and the body is relaxed, then you can do things like watching the breath, and it's such an easy thing to do. So your mind, hey, how about watching the breath? Oh yeah, that's a good idea. And off you go watching the breath and you never miss one. You don't force it. If you have to force your mindfulness onto something like the breathing, it means you're not ready. You haven't done the preparation. Too much effort. It's not a relaxing, peaceful experience. But if you've done all the preparations, your body is relaxed, the mind is relaxed, and it's so easy to watch the breath. You just watch the breath here for hours. Because the mind is relaxed, mindfulness is strong enough, enough happiness, and you're enjoying just the peace and stillness of watching a breath. And after a while, the breath becomes, just like the body becomes really delightful when it's relaxed, even the breath becomes so delightful when the mind is relaxed. You know the benefit of letting go. You have this beautiful, delightful breath. And for those of you who have listened to my meditation teachings before, that delightful breath, I always call out the pivot point of meditation. When you're watching the breath there, and there's no effort at all, just joyful, having a wonderful time, really relaxed, very peaceful, then that breath really starts to take off. The delight gets very strong. And all these other stages of meditation, which I'll talk about later, which will really blow your mind, they just come naturally to you, without any force, without any effort. Not when you want them, because wanting them disturbs your mind. It's more doing stuff. It makes more waves on the surface. When you follow the instructions, just let things be, carry on letting things be, you really get into great, deep, wonderful states of mind. And for those people who doubt my approach, please remember the story of the Buddha himself. 6 years putting huge amounts of effort into his meditation and getting absolutely nowhere except frustration and almost about to give up. And then he decided to try this other way, letting things be, being kind to his body and mind. And that was when his first 5 disciples, you know, they were with him before and they thought he'd given up on the struggle for enlightenment. And they lost all faith in this Siddhartha Gautama fellow, because, you know, he was just not practicing anymore. He wasn't struggling, he wasn't striving anymore. That's what they thought, because that was going against what people expected. Like sometimes the teachings I'm saying here, go against what you expect from meditation. You think this, you have to put some effort into this. Really try hard. Come on, let's do it. Forget about the aches and pains. I'm going to get enlightened no matter what. Please remember what happened to the Buddha. 6 years messing around, getting nowhere. Until he discovered this beautiful path, letting go, middle way, being peaceful, not struggling, not striving. Other people didn't understand that. That's why they abandoned him. But of course you all know that that is what made him a Buddha. Sitting under that Bodhi tree, just letting everything go and becoming so incredibly still. Stillness is just this beautiful, beautiful quality. Many of you came here and you thought this place was still. That's why in Bodhinyana Monastery, somebody came up and said, "Oh, this is such a peaceful monastery," they were saying, when all these people were around at lunchtime today. I felt like saying, "What do you mean this is peaceful? You're making so much noise. Talking and shouting and banging cups and stuff at lunchtime. That wasn't peaceful." I said, "Well, when you go, it's much more peaceful." I wouldn't say that to them, otherwise they wouldn't come again, and it means I wouldn't get fed. So you always have to be kind to the hand that feeds you. But when they left, it was nice and peaceful. But that was not really peaceful yet once they left. It was still the birds messing around and the wind in the trees. But then I go into my cave. And when I go into my cave, there's no sound in there at all. But that's not peaceful yet, because I've still got my mind. But then I sit meditation in that cave. Now we're getting a bit peaceful. There's so many different levels of stillness. And you're going to go into some incredible deep levels of stillness. And it does happen sometimes that you get into these deep stages of meditation, deeper than you've ever been before. You think, "Wow, this is so peaceful, so still, this must be it." And then you get into some place even more still than that, even more peaceful. And it really is incredible just how stillness, you just scratch the surface and it can be hugely more still than this. I know that people actually enjoy that peace and stillness. They come to Bodhinyana Monastery at lunchtime and they say, "Oh, we come here because it's so peaceful, it's so nice here." They haven't got scratched the surface of what peace is like, but even the little amount is very joyful. And then when you get into this deep meditation, you really start to enjoy and bliss out, because this becomes incredibly profound. very blissful, very beneficial, physically, spiritually. And if you want to find out what the meaning of life is, stop thinking about it. You get nowhere that way except headaches. Experience it. The meaning of life is stillness. See if you can actually experience that. And get even closer to bigger, deeper meanings. Still. So, when we understand what stillness is the goal, we understand that letting go is the means. And that's why we have a meditation retreat like this. See how much you can let go. So, let go of all the planning, which is why we ask people to live in the present moment. Forget about just what day it is. It's wonderful when you can just live in this moment. You haven't got a clue whether it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I always like telling people, I really got into that so much when I was a monk in Thailand, that it wasn't I didn't know what day it was. It wasn't I didn't know what year it was, what month it was. I didn't know what year it was. Honestly, I had no idea what year it was. And it's only when I came to Perth, because I had this experience. There was this Nepalese guy. I still remember his name, Druba. And he had an epileptic fit in the garden of our first centre in Magnolia Street. And I was with him at the time just to call the ambulance, make sure he was okay. He suffered from epilepsy. And the first thing, you know, when he came to consciousness, the first thing the ambulance drivers asked him, what day is it? And fortunately, he got it right. I said, why do you ask him that? Well, that's a standard question. If you don't know what day it is, we take you straight away to the mental hospital. And from that day on, I thought, oh my goodness, I better know what day of the week it is from now on. I would have been a top candidate to go to the mental hospital in Thailand in those days. And they asked, what year is that? I haven't got a clue. No, they're really crazy. But anyway, you don't need to do that. You can be crazy. No one's going to take you to the funny farm here. Although there's this one funny story about the funny farm that... Oh, it's great, some of the stories of bringing Buddhism into the West, especially meditation. This was our monastery in England. The first time they got a monastery there was in Sussex, a really top-class area of England, where all the really expensive lords and ladies and wealthy people lived. And one of the people who came to the monastery was a psychiatrist. She worked in the home for the mentally ill. And, of course, she lived in a village, one of these old-fashioned villages in England, where everybody knew everything about everybody. And if they didn't know, they'd chat and gossip and find out what was going on. So they all knew that this was a psychiatrist who worked in this local hospital. But she also had a very big house. And so when the monks were looking for a place to hold a retreat, she offered her house, come to my house. There's so many rooms and there's these stables. It wouldn't take much to sort of clean them up and make that a meditation hall. So they worked very hard. I think the monks gave her some hand. And they had a weekend meditation retreat, one of the first meditation retreats. That all these people like you just meditating there. But they also did walking meditation in the garden. Just really lifting the feet and moving it forward. In the garden, in this village, in one of the most conservative parts of UK. And of course, many of those women would look through the curtains and see these people walking in such a strange manner that one of these old villagers, old women, she called the police. And the police cars came because they thought that she brought her patients back for the weekend because that's what everyone looked like crazy people. And it took a lot of argument to make sure that all these meditators weren't taken and into this institution and kept there for 6 months to prove that they were actually sane. Adding two and two together and getting five, you know, just psychiatrists, people acting strange, must be her patients. But anyway, so you don't need to sort of do things in a weird way, but be patient. And of course, a patient is just, you've got 9 days, plenty of time. So don't force it. Live in the present moment. Relax. Because don't you know that schedules, all these schedules, they cause so much tension in you. You've got to get to work at a certain time. Just how tense that makes you, especially in a traffic jam, or you get up late. And you have to achieve something, you know, get some quota done. Ah, oh, that causes you so much tension and stress. You don't have anything to do now. So many of you have been here before, 9 days. Previous times you haven't achieved anything. You are hopeless meditators. That's why you've come back again. Your mistake last time was trying to get somewhere. This time, use reverse psychology. Don't try and get anywhere. Accept the fact you're hopeless and useless. You're not going to achieve anything. So just enjoy the next 9 days. Then you'll get somewhere. Then you'll start to have some great meditations. When you stop trying to get somewhere. That's one of the reasons in one of my books I made the observation that I travel around a lot and I go to many cities and countries in the world, big cities, and in all of those cities I tell people it's very, very rare that I come up and see a human being. Human beings are very rare in modern cities of our world. All I ever manage to see are human goings and human doings. Never any human beings. They're always going somewhere, always doing something. Just like when Jacob, he comes on a Saturday afternoon to meditation. And he asked me once, I was just going into our office in our centre in Nolamara with a bunch of papers. He says, how's it going, Ajahn Brahm? And very stupidly I said, oh, Jacob, I'm getting there. And that's when he hit me. He said, where is it you're actually getting? I thought, oh God, he's caught me out. Instead of being here, I was going somewhere. And I realised so much of your life is going somewhere. Are you ever getting there? You're not getting there at all. You're just wasting time when you're going somewhere. So don't go somewhere. Don't do something. Just be here. Learn how to be here instead of going somewhere else. You're in the hall? Be in the hall. You're in the toilet? Be in the toilet. Don't think, I'll get this out of the way to do something else. No, you're in bed, be in bed, enjoy it. Don't think, oh, I've got to get up now, I've got to go and meditate, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. For goodness sake, enjoy life. Enjoy the moment. Be here. It's called mindfulness, but it gives you a lot of peace, a lot of stillness. So always catch yourself, if ever you're trying to go somewhere, getting somewhere, you're not really being here anymore. You're just another person who's restless, who's missing out on the point of life, of being here. How often in your life so far have you really been here? In life as it happens. How often have you just been going somewhere else? Not really knowing where you are. Just knowing your destination. Knowing where you're supposed to go. So in this retreat, please be here as much as possible. It took a lot of energy and effort getting here. Now you're here, I say, each one of you, you've arrived. You've arrived, baby. You've arrived at the present moment. So please enjoy it once you've arrived, instead of just, you know, as soon as you've arrived, going somewhere else. Imagine that. You came this afternoon, you packed your bag, got your bags, you went into your room. 1 minute after being in your room, you pack your bags again, you go somewhere else. That's like your life so far. So now you put your bags in the room, you're here, leave them in the room. Be here for the next 9 days. Don't even think of tomorrow, or the next day, or the week half, or the years, or whatever. Enjoy this moment, because that's the only place you can find any stillness. And don't worry about checking your emails or telephones. That's one of the reasons why there is no real very good internet contact connectivity in this place. And anyway, you are not that important. Honestly. If you don't check your emails, the economy of India, of Malaysia, of Australia is not going to go down the tubes. It's going down the tubes anyway, so you don't have to worry about it. You're not important enough, so you don't need to check the emails. The world will go on quite happily without you. So you don't need to worry at all about anything. There's wonderful, wonderful things that I remember doing this retreat once. Oh, I don't know, about a month or something. And when I came out of the retreat, people said, oh, have you heard, have you heard, have you heard what? Princess Diana has died, she's died, it's so sad. What are you talking about? People die all the time, so what? It's wonderful when you're not involved in things. And then you just see how crazy the world can be. But you're not part of it anymore. You can actually be free. So, please, no need to check your emails for 9 days. I'm sure you've all bought your smartphones, tablets, and goodness knows what else. Some of you have. So if you want to hand them in, so you don't have any temptation. The monks are quite happy to accept them and give them back to you afterwards. If you can't. But it's so hard. There is actually a few places where you can get a signal, but I'm not telling you. So please don't ask Daniel or anybody else who's been here a lot. This is your meditation retreat. It's so hard to get a place to come on this retreat. Now you're here, please enjoy it. Have some peace and quiet. Get away from all that stuff. It's suffering. It doesn't cause you any happiness and peace. So please, just let it all go. And enjoy, be here. Instead of, be a human being again. Instead of a human going, a human doing stuff. And that way, the mind can become peaceful and can become still. And I guarantee you'll enjoy it so much. So again, this is just the first instructions of many. There's much more instructions to come. Every morning I'll be giving you new teachings on meditation. It's amazing. You can talk for days and days and days and days and days just on how to still the mind. Because that's, you know, what I've become skilled in. That's what I know. That's more than anything else. Yeah, you can talk about Buddhism, but you can read that in books. And again, that's what I gave a talk last Friday about intellectual materialism. Just seeing who knows the most about everything. That's not the meaning of life. To know the most about dependent origination and argue with other people about it, that's so stupid. Instead, be still. So no arguments at all. Understand peace. So you don't need to write a book about it anymore. Understand the joy. The joy and happiness of just being here. And then you don't need any more self-help books. So this is actually the path of meditation, which I'm going to teach you here. I didn't just scratch the surface, but of course, that just hopefully sets a bit of the mood. For those of you who've never been on a meditation retreat here before, we've got all these chairs, as many empty. Many of you get very sore sitting on the ground for too long. That's what we have the chairs for. They are for sitting on. So if you get sore sitting on the ground, get on a chair. You can sit on the ground once and then sit on a chair once or twice. Don't force the body. You do not get extra enlightenment points by meditating on the ground. So this is not about forcing the body. If you want to learn how to sit on the ground, go to a yoga retreat. Learn how to stretch. This is learning how to make the mind peaceful. So here you can have as many cushions, as stools, as chairs. You can lean against the wall if you want. Two very smart women over there. They got the best seats already. Oh, there's one over there. The wall is just a beautiful place to lean against. So you've got your place now for the rest of the retreat. They must have come here first of all probably yesterday to get that place. Very lucky. And those at the back over there, you know why people meditate at the back? It's usually because they have bad digestion and out of compassion for everybody else. So if you are passing a lot of wind, you've got bad digestion, out of compassion for others, please sit at the back. Otherwise, if you sit in the front, then it's 1, 2, 3, 4, about 7 rows have to actually suffer the smell from your backside. So I know if you're having a lot of wind while you're sitting in the back. Anyway, that's just a bit of a joke, being a bit naughty. But in the meantime, just relax, enjoy yourselves. And again, there's another talk at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's almost 9 o'clock now, so it's time to stop. So, is there any questions to start off with? No, okay. From tomorrow, any questions, you can write them on a piece of paper outside, and I will answer them in the evening. And in the evening, they don't have to be serious questions, sometimes some funny questions as well, because you'll be meditating all day. And it's important to put some joy, fun, and laughter into meditation. Otherwise, people get so tight and stiff and so depressed after a day's meditation. That's why a few funny stories, deep questions as well, and then people have a wonderful time. Okay, so now we finish off every talk with three sadhus. And those of you who've been here before to know how the three sadhus go, please help everyone else by giving it everything you've got. 1, 2, 3. Sadhu. 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 I've been to some retreats and sometimes I go, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It almost makes you want to commit suicide. So three big sadhus, a lot of energy, it makes life much happier. Okay, so have a nice evening. Those who want to go to bed, go to bed. And stay up, stay up. Those who can't decide, just go and sit in the middle somewhere. See what happens. Okay, have a nice evening, everyone.